Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled Driving Forces, What Puts the Fire in Your Team's Belly? Well, as you know, Tom, I'm this month's presenter, so let me throw the ball in your court for a moment. What struck you about this presentation?
You know, Bill, I've heard you talk about disk testing and drivers for some time, but you put the two into context in this presentation. You mentioned that disk testing talks about how we do things, while drivers tell us why we do things. That subtle difference has huge ramifications when it comes to matching individuals to specific jobs.
Oh, it sure does, Tom. You know, when employees are properly matched to the right position, sales statistically increase 50%, and profits increase up to 27%. This presentation does a good job of helping you understand the 12 different driving forces and how to put them into use when matching specific individuals with specific jobs. Most of our listeners are aware of my background in distribution and in training. However, some may not be aware that I've been with Grandy & Associates for over 13 years and am currently the president of the company, having purchased it over 5 years ago. Grandy & Associates is based out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and has provided business training to the trades industry for over 30 years. Recently, however, sales training and online training have been added to the company's offerings. And now, with Driving Forces, What Puts the Fire in Your Team's Belly? Here's yours truly, Bill Kennard, with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Hey folks, Bill Kennard here with this month's Business Advantage webinar titled Driving Forces. What's the fire in your team's belly? You know, it's interesting. You know, we start to try and find people to fit on our team. And it's so hard to find the right people today. We struggle with that one. So often we wind up hearing, look, I'm just trying to find people, let alone find good people. Well, the problem with that is it doesn't help. It doesn't pay to get the wrong person on the team. I often hear people going, look, I'm just trying to find somebody who can fog a mirror and I'll hire them. That's the worst thing that you can do. I don't want to hire somebody that doesn't have what it takes to do the job. Because again, your people are your greatest asset within your company. And having the wrong people can hurt you as much as anything else in the company. And so we're going to talk about this a little bit today in this webinar titled Driving Forces. What is that force, that driving force in your team, behind your people, making them tick, making them think? You know, we look at this piece of the puzzle and we start out and you know, you've got any one of your team members. And your team members are really, you know, there's a whole lot that makes up that team member. Right? There's tools that are out there that say they're personality profiles, and they're not personality profiles. There's a lot more that goes into personality than can be measured. And if anybody tells you that they can do that, run. But we start, we look at that, and there's all this that goes into that you know, an individual. And then there's, what are those needs that the job has? Those things that are you know, if you will, much sometimes smaller. You get some people who will put everything they've got into the job. Then you get others that will just give you what they need to give you. And so how do we reconcile those two together? That winds up becoming the issue. That winds up becoming what we're looking to try and fit. Now, if you look at it, you know, people have to pursue their passion. If you took the most successful professionals and you gathered them together, they would have one common trait, one thing that's common for all of them. They'd have an absolute focused sense of what drives them to perform. Right? They know what that is. And that sense that whatever it is that drives them to perform, they're using it in everything that they do. But one thing is clear. What the job requires lines up with that passion, with that driving force that they've got inside of them. Right? We look at this piece of the puzzle. This happens because of a couple of different reasons. It happens because, you know, the work that they're passionate about satisfies their driving force. That same thing that, you know, the work that they're doing, right, and they're, you know, that they're passionate about is the same thing. You know, it matches up with that passion inside of them. If it doesn't match up, they're gonna focus their passion someplace else, and it's gonna be someplace other than at work. that just makes them do a little bit less. Right? They're feeding that those underlying forces to allow their careers to flourish. Again, by utilizing you know, what the job takes matches up with that passion. And so, again, everything is heading in the same direction. It's a win-win. Right? And their work provides purpose and direction in everything that they do and all that they accomplish. They go home at the end of the day going, man, I felt great. Today was an awesome day. I ran into a couple of struggles, but it was an awesome day. Right? That's, again, the passions, their job, are lining up perfectly. So how do we figure this piece of the puzzle out? And it's imperative that you figure it out. It's important that we really figure out, what does the job require? What passions do my people have? As Jim Collins says, it's getting the right people in the right seat on the bus. Right? I don't want to just have the right people on the bus. And some of us have the right people on the bus. They're just in the wrong seat. They're doing the wrong job. I can move them to a different job, and suddenly they take off. Right, we look at that piece of the puzzle. You know, think about it. How many times have you had a service technician, for example, and he's a rock star, he's stellar, he's awesome in what he does, and you promote him up to service manager, figuring he will lead the rest of the team in that same rock star manner, and he's only okay. Now what do? Because now you can't go backwards, right? So you either live with a mediocre service manager, or you got to lose him. Right? And that doesn't work. Right? What happened is his passions lined up with the service technician role, with that job. It didn't line up with service manager. And as we get a little bit deeper into this, you'll see that becomes very, very clear. So let's talk about that a little bit as we go through this. Now, when we look at it, the end result of aligning the passions and aligning those passions up with the job and what the job requires is top performers will meet and exceed expectations and projections if they're doing the work that they love. If they're doing something that they're passionate about, they will put everything they have into it. And they'll move forward every single day, again, with that drive, because, man, I got successes, right? As we have successes, we continue to grow. If we look at a couple of different things, the result, organizations with higher than average levels of employee engagement will realize 27% higher profits. 27%. We're getting more out of the people we're doing. They're focused on doing what we need to within the job to remain profitable. 27% higher profits. They'll also realize 50% higher sales. Again, you know it, right? If you have the passion in what you're doing, then pretty soon you just believe in it and it oozes out of you and people can see that in you, right? It has a major impact. All right, so be watching for that. These organizations also tend to realize a 50% higher customer loyalty level. Because, again, the people are taking care of them with everything they have. And as a result, again, the customers see that and they will be attracted to that and they want to have more of it. Right, so take advantage of that. And they'll also realize a 38% above average productivity. We get more out of the people. They put more into the job on our team if they've got the passion, they believe in it. If people don't have passion, they're not going to invest it in what they do. Right. We also do succession planning at Grandy Associates. And one of the things that we see on a regular basis, we talk about it in this class, is does that next generation, right? If it's a family-owned business, the next person that we think is the leader of this company can be the next leader. If that person doesn't have the same passion and energy that I had when I created it, are they going to excel? Probably not. We've all heard the old adage, the first one built it, the second one milked it, the third one killed it, right? If the second and third generation don't have the same passion for this thing that you have, they're not going to continue to excel the way that you have in the past. That passion is important. That passion drives what we do and how we do it. We have to be looking for that piece of the puzzle. Now, as we look at these and get into the driving forces a little bit deeper, a couple of things that you have to remember. Number one, driving forces are not good or bad. They just simply are. Right? One driving force is not better than another driving force. They just simply are. Second thing is we really have to look at, what does the job need? What does the job require? every job has different driving forces that will be important to that particular job. So we have to figure out what does the job need for a driving force before we can figure out what the person needs. Often companies will use assessments to hear, well, yeah, we use DISC, right? DISC is measuring behaviors, right? Behaviors is how we do things, how we talk, how we conduct ourselves, how detailed are we, how talkative are we, right? It's how we do things, how we approach other people, how we approach challenges, how we approach rules and procedures, how we approach patience and consistency. It's the how of what we do. Driving forces is not how. That's behavior. Driving forces is why we do things. Our driving forces will steer our behaviors. We'll get into that as we start talking and covering these things a little bit farther. Right, so we need to know, what does the job require? Because if we know what the job requires, then we know what to look for in an individual to put in that seat on the bus to fill that role. So their driving forces will drive their behaviors. It makes a big difference, right? Now, a couple of other things. Each driving force represents a lens through which that we view the world, right? It will change the way that we look at a given situation based on the driving forces that are inside of us. What we consider to be fulfilling and rewarding, right, comes from these driving forces, right? If I have a job and my role matches up with what we're doing, what I'm doing at work, man, I tell you, it will absolutely, I'll go home at the end of the day going, man, today was a rock star day. I love today, right? If I could have 240 more of today's, it'd be awesome, right? That's kind of what it's coming from, right? It's also what sparks our initiative. It's what really gets our juices flowing. It's the fire in our belly, right? It's what gets us up in the morning and makes us look forward to going to work. If you really don't look forward to going to work and you really have passion about something else, right, odds are there's a misalignment in driving forces there. Now, I'm not saying that we should go to work and we should spend 24 hours a day at work. Man, I love that. No, right. There's way more to life than work. There's no question about it. But what I am saying is that if we're passionate about the work that we're doing, we spend a lot of time at work. If we're passionate about it, we're going to enjoy what we do. Right? I love doing what I do. I want to do this until, quite frankly, the day I don't want to do it anymore. And at that point, I'm going to go find something else that I'm really passionate about, right? And so we like that piece of the puzzle because my driving forces align perfectly with what I'm doing here today. Right? And so let's dig a little bit deeper into these driving forces. Now, when you start looking at this, for the past 30 years or so, right? So remember, driving forces is different than DISC, right? DISC is behavior. Driving forces, for the past 30 years or so, there were 6 driving forces. They're all based on the research of Edward Spranger, and Spranger came up with this idea that there were 6 different driving forces. Well, really, anytime we're measuring something, anytime we're looking at that, well, there's a high score and there's a low score. So does that mean that if I have a high score, it's good, and if I have a low score, it's bad? No, it doesn't. It just simply means I respond differently. Remember, driving forces is not good or bad, it just is. And so it's really only telling us half the story. Sometimes if I have a low score, a very low score, it can actually be, I might even have an aversion to that particular driving force. And if you put me in a role that requires me to do that, it can actually turn me off and demotivate me. Right? So there really are 2 different ends of the spectrum, and we've got to look at both ends of that spectrum. Driving forces uniquely define what sparks motivation and ambition in each one of us. And it can be on either end of that spectrum. And so really what the research that Target Training International has done is taken that in 2 different directions, right? We've got you, right? And we've got the job, right? Do you put all of you into the job? Probably not, right? There's more to you than just what you do at work. And so Spranger came up with this idea that there's 6 driving forces. Well, really, it's 6 driving force categories, 6 different categories that can motivate you and have that passion inside of you. All right, so first let's look at these 6 categories and define what are they. The first one is knowledge. It's about learning. Do you like learning for the sake of gaining knowledge or not? It's not good or bad, it just is. Right? But it defines kind of that who you are and how you do things. right? Or why you do things. Let's be specific about it. The second one is utility. It's about a return on investment. Do you do things because of a return on investment, or you do things just because they need to be done? It's two different perspectives. Number three is your surroundings. Do you shoot for, do you try and find a sense of balance or harmony, or is that really not important? Right? Some people look for the beauty in things. Others, they don't care. Again, it's not good or bad. Number four is others. Do you focus on helping other people, or do you focus on doing that just for a specific reason? Right? I mean, we can look at helping other people because I like to help other people for whatever reason, just because it's the right thing to do, and other people want to do it for a specific reason, right? So we'll look at that one. The number five is power. Do you do things for power? Am I looking to further me, right? Or am I not so worried about me? We'll do it for the greater good, right? That's a driving force. And number six is methodologies, systems, traditions, doing things for a certain reason. Right, so that's our driving force categories. Prior to this, we looked at that as that's all there was. But again, that's only half the picture, right? So again, we start out. We've got you, right? We've got the job down here, right? We've got these six driving force categories. Well, really, what we're doing is we're adding. There's two different ends of every one of those spectrums, right? So out of those six categories, there's 12 different driving forces. So let's look at those 12 driving forces, and what are they, and how does this individual respond or react? Now, let me just take me out of this picture here for a little bit so I'm not in front of your graphic. So first off, the first driving force is knowledge. It's all about learning, right? That was the category. Now, the two different ends of that spectrum come up with this. The first one on the left side of this scale is instinctive. In other words, these are people who are driven by utilizing past experiences, intuition, and seeking specific knowledge when necessary. These are people who, look, I can just kind of figure it out. Sometimes we look at this individual and we say that they're really mechanically inclined. Well, that could be the case, right? They're just, they look at a situation based on what they know and their experiences, and I did something like this a while ago, and I can apply it to this, and it kind of works. And yeah, so again, they're just applying just their gut feel and their intuition to figure out a situation. They'll go out and learn something if it helps them figure out this situation, right? I tend to be very much that way, right? I'll kind of look at a situation, I'll kind of figure it out, and okay, I ran into a roadblock. Now, all right, let's go dig up another YouTube video and try and figure this one out, or okay, let me do a little bit of research on the web, and or I hate to say it, but okay, let's go ahead and read the directions, right? We'll look for that knowledge when we need to have that knowledge. The other end of that spectrum, on the other hand, is intellectual. These are people who are driven by opportunities to learn, to acquire knowledge, and the discovery of truth. These are individuals who like to learn just for the sake of learning, right? My family gives me, I can look at my family and I have so many different examples of driving forces. My daughter, my youngest daughter, she would sit and read the encyclopedia just because she could. I'm going, really? Right? Why would you do that? Right? But she likes it. She'd read. She's always reading something just to try and learn something. And so, again, that's two different ends of that spectrum. One uses my gut on one side of the spectrum. The other one is going to learn just for the sake of learning. Right? I know odds are some of you attending or listening to this program are doing so just because it was an opportunity to learn something. Others are trying to figure out specifically why Joe isn't doing what Joe should be doing. Right? Two different ends of that same spectrum. Right? We're doing things for very different reasons. That's the first category. It's the first two driving forces. The next driving force, again, the category was the utility. It's about a return on investment. The first end of the spectrum, right on the left, is selfless. These are people who are driven by completing tasks for the greater good with little expectation for personal return. In other words, I'm going to do things just because it's for the greater good. Right. So I'll go ahead and do this. It's going to chew up some of my time, but that's okay. Right? Because if we can further the greater good, then man, I'm all about that. Right? That's the first side. The second side is resourcefulness. These are people who are driven by practical results, maximizing both efficiency and returns for their investment of time, talent, energy, and resources. I'll put in the work, I'll put in the energy, but there better be a payout at the end. What's good for me? What's good for my customer? What's good for this company? And what's going to give me the greatest return on investment for my time, talent, energy, and resources? That's a resourceful person, right? If I'm dealing with, some, quite frankly, a comfort consultant, somebody in sales, I want them to be driven by resourcefulness. I want their utility resourcefulness to be very, very strong. Right? Because again, chances are they're going to be compensated by commissions. And so I want them to have the drive to put in the work and know that there's going to be a payout at the end. They'll be motivated by that. Quite frankly, if I've got a technician and you're looking to have them do add-on sales and you're going to pay them a spiff or a bonus, they better have a driving force of resourcefulness. That will tend to drive them. Now, one of the things to remember is that just because somebody doesn't have this trait doesn't mean that they won't do it. They may very well do it. The difference, however, is they won't feel good about having to do it. Right. And in fact, if I have somebody who is very selfless, right, so on this utility scale, they fall on the selfless side, they're going to do things for the greater good. And you're now going to force them to or put them in a role where they have to really be looking for that return on investment. It'll probably actually demotivate them. Right? They don't necessarily like that. Right? So think about that one a little bit. The third category that we had was the surroundings. Right, people, you know, it's what's the sense of balance? So the two different driving forces that go with surroundings. First on the left is going to be somebody who's very objective. They're driven by the functionality and the objectivity of their surroundings. Look, I it doesn't really matter what it looks like as long as it's functional. That's all that matters, right? And in some cases, that's okay. In others, the right-hand side of this spectrum, the opposite side of that is harmonious. Somebody, in fact, who is looking for, you know, and driven by the experiences, subjective viewpoints, and balance of their surroundings. They're looking for harmony in life. They're looking for the balance in life. Right? How does it look? How does it feel? How's the experience? Right. Now, again, it doesn't matter. You know, you look at, you know, and sometimes I'll have people say, well Bill, this is, you know, HVAC, or this is, you know, roofing, or this is whatever, harmonious. We don't deal with that. We don't even need it. That doesn't play a part, right? Again, I'll go back to my family members, right? My brother owns an HVAC company here in town. His number one driving force is surroundings harmonious. It's all about finding the beauty and the balance in things. I've had the pleasure or displeasure of building four houses throughout my life. He's done the HVAC in every one of them. It is unbelievable what that man can do with metal. Right? The ductwork in that house is absolutely gorgeous. Right? It's beautiful. Right? Every line is perfectly straight. Right? He doesn't do straight box off ends on the plenums, right? They're all angled off and they're smooth and the corners are smooth and rounded and everything is, I mean, it looks gorgeous because that's important to him. Every time one of his teams goes in and does an installation, he will come in afterwards and inspect it. He expects his team to do the installs the exact same way. It's just who he is. It's how he does things. Right, that's somebody who's driven by harmonious versus somebody. And I remember at one point, one of his guys who's doing an install at my house, he was doing a replacement on my last system. He was very much objective. And I remember he connects the vent pipes for the furnace, and one is about, you know, 5 degrees off from the other one, and so they're actually running almost in two different directions. You know, one look at that. In fact, I told the guy, I said, I will guarantee you, if you leave it like that, my brother is going to be on you. You better fix that one, because that's not acceptable. Now, I wouldn't have accepted it either, and the professionalism needs to be higher than that. But again, it's just two different perspectives when we look at that. The next category that we had was others, helping others. The two different ends of this spectrum are going to be intentional or altruistic. First on the left is intentional. Intentional, these are individuals who are driven to assist others for a specific purpose, not just for the sake of being helpful or supportive, but for a specific reason. right? So many of the people within my organization, I want them to be intentional, right? You're a service technician. I want you to be, you know, to want to be helping people, right? So you can provide the greatest level of comfort or peace of mind or whatever it is within their home, right? My CSR, I want them to help my customers for a specific reason, right? To get a technician in their home and take care of the issues that they have, right? That's a very specific reason. On the other end of that spectrum was altruistic. These are individuals who are driven to assist others for the satisfaction of being helpful or supportive, right? In other words, we help people just because we like to help people. It's the right thing to do. Now, two quick examples of this one. I was working with a gentleman at one point in time, and his primary driving force was others, altruistic. And when we look at that, he was trying to understand that one a little bit. Now, this individual, keep in mind, had just shut down his company and was now working as a service manager for somebody else. Right? And so I said to him, well, Mike, let me put it this way. You're going down the road. You have a 10 o'clock sales appointment. You're zipping down the road. It's 5 minutes to 10. It looks like you're going to be a few minutes late. It's raining outside. Right? So get the picture. You come up, you see somebody stranded on the side of the road with car trouble. What do? He goes, well, you got to stop and help them. I'm going, but you're going to be late for your appointment. He goes, it doesn't matter. You got to help them. That's a very altruistic approach, right? I'm helping other people because it's the right thing to do. We always help other people, right? Somebody who's high utilitarian is going to be zipping past going, wow, sucks to be them, right? Yeah, and they're going, you know, zipping down the road. Now, you might pick up the phone and call somebody and say, hey, can you go help this individual? Right, but man, I got a 10 o'clock, got to go, right? Just a different approach. It's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It just is, right? So that's the first, you know, very clear, specific example of that point. I deal with one franchise across the U.S. and Canada. And every time we're dealing with an assessment, the culture within this franchise is such that the people they tend to attract are very altruistic. Now, if I have a service technician who's very altruistic, is driven by that driving force, then I need to, I got to watch that individual because they're going, oh yeah, but more poor Mrs. Smith, she's on a fixed income. She can't afford this invoice. I think we'll go ahead and discount that by 10% for her. Right? And all of a sudden they're giving away the company's profits. Well, you know, the problem with that is, again, they're doing it out of a very good motive. The problem is it's hurting the company. Right, so in these situations, I encourage the company owners to go out and do something as a company, whether it's to participate in a Habitat for Humanity build or a food drive or whatever it is, to let the entire team get their altruistic driving force on in that area so that way they can focus on doing their job and not express it in that way. Right, so again, sometimes I need to take advantage and at least pay attention to these so I don't create other problems. The next category was power or individualistic. Right? Now, the two ends of the spectrum for power are collaborative and commanding. On the left is collaborative. These are people who are driven by being in a supporting role and contributing with little need for individual recognition. In other words, I'm going to do my job, and as long as the company exceeds, man, I'm good with that. You don't have to call me out. In fact, in a lot of cases, please don't call me out in front of the group. Right? I don't like to hear that. I just want to, you know, do my job. I want to, you know, I want to contribute. Right? I don't need to have the pat on the back or the recognition. Right? The other end of that spectrum is commanding. These people are driven by status, by recognition, and control over personal over their personal freedom. Right? They want to be in control. They want to be in charge. Right, and they're driven by that. And so, how can I get ahead? Right, when I do good, right, man, recognize me in front of the rest of the group. I like that. Right, that's part of who I am. That's what I look for. Right, and so you know, that's a driving force. Right, two different individuals. Right, two different ends of that spectrum. Right, not good or bad. They just are. Right, and then the last, the sixth category was methodologies, traditions, or systems. Right, the two different ends of this spectrum are receptive versus structured. So somebody, you know, who's driven by that receptive driving force. They're driven, you know, they like new ideas and methods and opportunities that aren't really, they don't fall inside of our normal process of doing things, right? They fall outside of a defined system for living. In other words, you know, it might not be the way that we always do things, but by God, that sounds interesting. Let's give that a try, right? I tend to be that way. We have a way of doing things, but man, there's always a better way. So let's give it a try. Maybe we can find something else that helps us. Versus somebody who's on the other end of that spectrum. They're structured. Somebody who's structured, they're driven by a traditional approach, proven methods, a defined system for living. We have a way of doing things. We do them in that certain way every single time. Right? And I like that, right? If I know what my system is, I know what that approach is, I like that. I feel good about what I do at the end of the day. You have somebody who's motivated by the structure, and they're in an environment you don't have processes of doing things, and it seems every time you do things, they're a little bit different within your office. They go home at the end of it, and odds are they're going to eventually leave because you're just so unorganized, right? Where somebody who's totally receptive is totally okay with that. Right? So look at that individual. Do we, you know, what does the job require? Right. Again, I work with a couple of companies that, again, they're very structured in the way that they do things. Right. We every single time we, you know, the phone rings, right? We pick it up, we answer it in this way. You know, the CSR handles the customer this way. These are the steps that we take with every single one. We read the script, whatever we do, right? That's the structure. From there, we dispatch the call. The technician does things in a certain manner, right? If they're like that, if I have somebody who's receptive, they're not structured, I'm absolutely going to be telling the company owner to at least pay attention to that piece of the puzzle, because that's an individual that, you know, some owners are go, that guy just goes rogue all the time. He won't follow the systems. He won't report back, right? If I have a comfort consultant, quite frankly, I want them to be structured. I want them to follow a approach. How do we handle the sales call? Right, I want them to report back. How many leads have they followed up on? How many jobs? What's their closing ratio? I want to know those things. Because if they're not going to do that, then as a business owner, I can't manage them. It makes it pretty difficult. Right? And they want to run the company versus me run the company. And so that winds up becoming an issue. Right? So those are our six different areas that we had talked about. Now, as we start looking at this piece of the puzzle, each of us has four primary driving forces, four primary drivers. They're our internal champion, right? There's four. So we looked at 12 of them. There's four of them that will tend to drive you, right? So I made it, for example, comfort consultant. I said I want them at one, when we were talking about ROI, I wanted them to be focused on that, right? I wanted that to be a strong driving force. I also said I wanted them to be structured, right? Four driving forces for each of us. You have those four. Right? These are the forces that move the story of your life forward. Right? The other eight, they're either not in play at all or only situationally they'll come in, but they're really not going to drive you in any way. It's the first four that are primary. So when we look at this, and I lay this out, right, and take a look at the handout that we provided with this one. Yeah, again, I can see those driving forces as we lay them out. The six categories, and then both ends of the spectrum as we look at that. Now, as we kind of dig through this a little bit, right? Sometimes we'll say, for example, if I look at the very first one, right? Somebody will say, well, you know, yeah, I'm instinctive, but that doesn't mean I don't like to learn. So every once in a while, I'll go out and learn. Right? Well, again, a person can have both sides of those, but I can see here that, you know, for intellectual, for example, I scored a 14, but instinctive, I scored a 65. Every once in a while, I'll go do this, you know, I'll go learn something, but for the most part, I'm using my gut, right? And so that's the driving force. In fact, if you look at each of the 12 that we've got, that's one of the strongest four, right? So that's a driving force for me. Right, this individual is very instinctive. Right, in this case, the second one that we've got, second category being utility. Again, just a little. I scored a 12 on resourcefulness. Right, looking for that return on investment. Really, but I score a 68 on the selfless side. So I'm really doing things for the greater good of the company without a problem. I don't need that return on investment on that one. The third one in this case, surroundings. Again, I can see that harmonious, a 57. objective of 29, right? So I'm stronger, harmonious, with without a question of a doubt, right? But it's not one of my strongest four, and so it's not a driving force, right? Under others, right? I can see here, I scored under altruistic a 69, right? And I scored on the intentional side only a 22. So again, I'm very altruistic. It's all about helping other people without a question of a doubt in this example. Next one is the power, right? I scored a 65 on collaborative, 17 on commanding. So it really, I don't need the recognition. It's not about me getting ahead. It's about the entire company getting ahead. And then last, every once in a while, you do see this one where methodologies, right? I scored a 0 on receptive. In other words, this whole idea just kind of winging it kind of freaks me out a little bit, right? In fact, if you put this individual, right, so I scored an 81 on structured and a 0 on receptive. You put this individual into a role where there's not definitions in how we do things, they're going to struggle. In fact, they're not going to last very long. They're going to go home at the end of the day going, wow, my job is just, I got to put in the time. That's all there is to it, right? And they're going to be demotivated, and eventually they're going to leave, right? And so I want to at least pay attention to that piece of the puzzle, right? When I see this individual, I'm telling this company owner, they need to have a definition. How do we do things? What's the order we do them in? Right? Pay attention to that part of the puzzle. So how does this fit, right? How does it come down to reality? Well, when we look at it, we can, you know, we have this whole idea of using assessments, right? And there's a lot of different companies that use a lot of different assessments that are out there. Again, we talked about DISC a little bit earlier. That's how we do things. Driving forces now is why we do things, right? And okay, I had an individual go through an assessment, and I see kind of what their how they score out, right? And they're strong in this area, and they're weak in this area. Okay, that's all well and good, but compared to what? That's the question. Compared to what? Right. So what we do is we actually create a measuring stick. We look at the job. Forget about the person for a minute. Let's just look at the job and what does the job require? Right. And ideally, what we're going to do is every time we have a situation that comes up, we're going to look at the individual job, find out what the job requires. And there's a process that we can help you with to walk you through that process. It's not hard. Takes just a couple of hours, and we can actually find out what does the job need. That now becomes my measuring stick. And so now when I have a person, a team member or a candidate look at or apply for a role, I can now measure that person up against the measuring stick to see how well they match up. And one of the things that we look for is, again, I can see in this particular role, right, I just pulled a couple of generic ones here for a second, and I remember there's four primary driving forces, right? So we just define what are those key four primary driving forces for the job, and how does that align with your four key primary forces or driving forces, right? And so in this particular case, the requirement was resourceful, intentional, harmonious, and instinctive. I can see here that, you know, in fact, on the first one, on resourcefulness, I was looking for somebody ideally in a range of 44 to 66. This guy actually scored a 74. He was a little bit better than that. Not an exact fit because he actually focuses on this more than he needs to, but he's still a good fit. I would absolutely take that one. I see here, and we basically give a cheat sheet which says, okay, are we color-coded? Is it an exact match, a good match, a fair match, or a poor match? Right, and in this particular case, it's considered a, you know, we're good match all the way through. I would absolutely consider this individual for that particular role. Right, sometimes we'll look at the individual role and we'll match 3 out of 4. Right, in this particular case, resourcefulness, they're not a great fit. Right, it's only fair compatibility, and so at that point, we look at it and yeah, I at least want to keep that one in mind if I'm going to put him in that role. Right, the more I can match up, the better off I am. Right, and every once in a while, we'll get a situation where they really don't match the driving forces at all. And if the candidate doesn't match what the job needs, then it doesn't matter how much time, energy, love, or money you put into that individual, they will never be a superior performer in this role. They may tell you they want to, they may even kind of show you that they want to, right? But if they don't have what it takes, they're never going to be there. Right now, it's interesting. We went through and again, had a candidate not all that long ago that was applying for a position. And the owner of the company called me and said, Bill, I like this individual. They're a nice person. I don't know them. There's just something I can't put my finger on. And so we went through and we did the typical DISC, you know, how they do things. And for what the job required, DISC was a perfect match. If that's all they looked at, they'd have hired this person in a heartbeat. But then when we went back and we looked at their driving forces, none of the driving forces matched. So behaviorally, how they did things lined up with the job, but they wouldn't have any passion in it. And they'd go home at the end of the day, quite frankly, frustrated in their job. And they'd quit and leave. So how much does that cost you, right? If you can eliminate that up front, you're much better off. Right, so let's give you some examples. So in your handout, I've got these same examples that are in there as well. So in the handouts, we've got what we've done is, again, when you're creating these measuring sticks, right, you can go back and we can help you create that measuring stick for any role within your company. In fact, just recently we had a company, we were dealing with them on the succession process of their company. Dad was getting ready to retire and they were looking at which one of the sons should be in that leadership role. You can't lead by committee. Right? Somebody has to make a final decision. So he's trying to figure out which one is the best for that particular lead role. And so he decided, let's actually create a measuring stick for my job. Right? Because everybody defines that leader a little bit differently. So they actually went through and lined it up and figured out what were the behaviors, the driving forces, and the competencies required for the job. Right? We can do that for any given job. But we also know that chances are you're not going to do that for every single position in your company. So what we've done is we've created several different benchmarks already. Every time we did this, we didn't do it on our own. We pulled in 10 to 12 contractors from around the country. We kind of laid out the position and had them help us create it, and then we combined it for one composite score. So it's a nice, well-rounded benchmark that we're using. So the first one I can see here, just to give you an example, for a CSR dispatcher, those driving forces that we need to have, the primary driving forces, first one is collaborative, second one is instinctive, right? People who are driven to, by utilizing past experiences, right? And just kind of working with their gut. Third one is intentional. I want people who are going to help people for the purpose of getting somebody in their home and fixing their problem, right? And I want somebody who is structured, who can work within a system. Now, again, I can see on a scale of 1 to 100, right? I'm not looking for 100s all the way down the list. The job is looking for somebody who's going to score around a 70 collaborative, a 60 instinctive, a 54 intentional, and a 51 structured, right? So those are the four primary driving forces. I want the individual to line up with these four as close as we can, right? If I look at a couple of other positions, a residential sales or comfort consultant, I'm looking for somebody who's first resourceful. They're looking for that return on investment, right? They're intentional. They're going to help people for a specific reason. They're harmonious. They're looking for that balance and in harmony, if you will, to a degree. And that they're instinctive. They're kind of going to work off of their gut a little bit. Right? Now, again, you can see what I'm looking for, 62, 54, 50, and 50, right? I look down that list, and I'm looking for somebody who lines up with that fairly closely, right? Couple of other examples, maintenance technician, resourcefulness, structured, altruistic, and intellectual, right? Now, again, I mentioned a little bit earlier, this is a maintenance tech. If I was looking for a service technician, I don't want the altruistic to be real high. Because again, that's a particular case where now they're gonna go in and they're going to want to be discounting or give the customer something for nothing, or, you know, on that side of it. Whereas here, straight maintenance, a little bit different bent to that individual, right? And then service manager, right? We look at that one, resourcefulness, receptive, instinctive, and objective are the driving forces. Now, it's interesting, again, when we look at the driving forces, and this is a prime example. I mentioned the example earlier, whereas if I have a service technician who's a rock star and I promote him up to service manager and he's just okay. If you look at the driving forces that are required for a service technician, some of the top driving forces are the bottom items for a service manager. Right? In other words, those skills that he's using to excel as a service technician are not needed as a service manager. And some of the skills that he needs as a service manager are in the bottom of the list for a service technician. He may or may not even have what it takes. Right? Worked with the company just yesterday that he hired a technician. And as I went through it, it was a pretty good match to the job for a service technician. But as I looked at it, he had every single qualification that it took to be a great service manager. So at that point in time, you know, they're hiring this individual knowing that they'll work him as a service technician for a little bit, get him ingrained in the culture of the company, how we do things, and likely then move him into a service manager role. Right? They already know for down the road they've got an individual who has what it takes. Right? Okay, I got these items. So what? Right? How does this really apply to me? Right? So I can compare the individual to the measuring stick and how well do they fit for the job. But really, how does it fit for what we're doing? All right. Well, really, it comes down to this, right? Number one, your drivers drive your behaviors, right? I said earlier, DISC is how we do things. It's your behaviors, how you talk, how you deal with problems and challenges, how you deal with people in other contexts, how you deal with pace and consistency, how you're dealing with rules and procedures set by other people, right? Yeah, again, your drivers are why you do things. Your drivers will steer your behaviors, right? So for example, if I have an individual who's a high D, right, that dominant, it's all about conquering the challenge, right? They're dominant, they want to be in charge, right? So now I take a couple of different driving forces, and how does it change what this high D individual does, right? So for example, if I have somebody who's altruistic, they're going to be absolutely driven to help other people, right? I mean, so their measure of success in their mind might very well be, man, we had this food drive today, we organized it, we put it together, and we were able to feed 3,000 people. Man, it was an absolute, man, I loved it, right? They're driven to help other people. If their driving force is resourcefulness, they're driven to make money or succeed. Right. Not so much about the feeding the other people, but man, how we were able to make these sales. Man, my goal this year was $2 million, and I'm already ahead of that. Right, so we're already exceeding that piece of the puzzle. Right, if that driving force is power, commanding rather, they're going to be driven to get ahead. Right, who do I got to start? How do I move forward? Right, how do I climb the ladder? This is the individual who's going up a step, climbing this ladder so they can climb the next ladder. Right, that's what they're driven by. That's what they're focused on. Okay, so you can see that driving forces will actually change the way and drive and steer their behaviors and how they do things. It changes what they're doing. So we just kind of did a complete wrap up of the, again, six different categories. There's six driving force categories, two different ends of the spectrum for each one. Right, so 12 total driving forces. You need to look at what the driving forces are. You need to look at how does the driving force line up with what the job requires? How will it steer that individual? Again, the driving force is the passion inside of my individual team members. The passions that they have inside, that steering force, does it match up with what the job requires? Now, if you're looking for a way to handle this thing, right? How do we measure that within our team? Feel free to give us a call at Grandy & Associates. We will absolutely help you steer through that. We'll kind of walk through that those puzzle pieces a little bit. Now, I just had a question that did come in. How does this compare to many of the other DISC assessments that are out there? Again, remember DISC, that's a good question. DISC is behaviors, right? DISC is how we do things. Driving forces is why we do them. Right, so they're different. Now, many assessments will look at that DISC piece, but remember the example that I shared with you a little bit ago where the candidate behaviorally matched up with what the job required, but their driving forces didn't align at all. You've got an individual who's going to be doing things for a very different way. They'll be demotivated within their role. Again, there's several different manufacturers of DISC who are out there, providers of DISC. It's all based on the research of William Marston, William Marston was the individual who invented the lie detector. Right, so it's kind of all driven off of some of that research and are they being honest in who they are and what they are and how they do things, that kind of thing. And so all of them come from that same research. They just call the different names, the different areas, the DISC. They might be amiable and driver, and right, they call them different names, but they really come down to the same categories, right? In some cases, it's fun country and command country and peace country, right? So we look at those areas, and they call them different things, but they're really the same item, right? Driving forces, a lot different. Driving forces, again, will steer those behaviors and how they do things.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.